And that music means it is a Tech Tuesday. Typically, we talk to Bridget Carey, a senior editor at CNET. But today, a senior reporter for CNET, Joan Saltzman, on the line with us. Joan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Great. Nice to meet you. Something in the news on this Tech Tuesday, which is kind of odd. We talk about Facebook and Google a lot, but this is turned real all of a sudden because they will be testifying to Congress. Explain this.
Yeah, there are representatives for Facebook, Google on Capitol Hill right now. They're testifying before the House subcommittee, the Judiciary subcommittee, and addressing white nationalism, the presence of white nationalism, especially after last month's massacre in Christchurch, New Zealand. There's a heightened desire to bring representatives of these tech companies to be held somewhat accountable, at least answer for how crimes like that and other kinds of hate speech and hate content can proliferate on their networks.
That is really interesting. I mean, there has to be some part of the responsibility of theirs to monitor things, but with all the things being presented to them, it seems like it's a lot of upkeep.
Yeah, that's so far during the hearing this morning, that's one of the points that these representatives are making, that they're monitoring, it's unprecedented the scale of content that they need to monitor. And also, a lot of these decisions are difficult. You have issues of free speech bumping up against hate speech, and the line that divides one from the other, it's very hard to gauge what that is and do it in a way where you're being fair to the person's intent.
Joan, is it other companies as well, or is it strictly Facebook and Google that are involved in this?
There are other people on the panel testifying before the committee. We have Facebook's content policy team lead. His name's Neil Potts, a woman who is their lawyer for free expression and human rights at Google. And then there's other representatives. But those are the two main tech company representatives that are on the panel today.
As I said to myself, I said out loud that it's hard for them to monitor all this information that's coming over, it still seems like they're responsible, so they almost need to find a way to do that. And they have the logarithms or algorithms or whatever they are that will catch some of these words, right?
Yeah, there have been, you know, YouTube, which is Google's gigantic video service, for example, has had for a long time the ability to capture copyright violations. It's called Content ID, their system for that. On the Facebook side, Facebook has for a long time had the ability to capture and recognize pornography, nudity, those sort of things. Where we come to this debate is how well these companies prioritize safety, expanding into hate, not just pornography or things that are violating someone's copyrights, but going into issues like hate. How well do they prioritize the safety of the user versus their own growth? And that's where we've gotten to this issue where these platforms are so big, by virtue of the fact that they've relentlessly pursued growth for so long, they've created a monster that's too big for themselves even to control.
Isn't it true, Joan, that anytime there's an incident, a horrible incident, the first thing they do is they go and they check the person responsible's Facebook page, and they check what the person has Googled over the last 6 months or a year. Those are always clues. I mean, they're clues into that person's psyche that come too late, but they're still clues, right?
You know, and I think that's actually giving them a little bit more credit than they deserve.
Yeah.
You know, part of the problem is that presumes that these platforms are monitoring to the degree that I don't think that they actually have the resources to do. Even as companies like Facebook and Google talk about how they're adding thousands of more moderators to keep an eye on their content, things are operated to such a vast degree that it would be difficult to do that sort of vetting for everything that gets reported. And there are things that just aren't being reported, too. You have to take that into account as well.
All right. Well, here's the scary thing. I don't really use I creep on Facebook. I don't post a lot of stuff anymore. Kids are not into it at all. Teenagers and even 20-year-olds are more into Instagram and Snapchat. But if you delete your Facebook page, explain how it can still track you. This is scary.
Right. So one of our reporters has a great story out today about how he has gotten into the habit of deactivating his Facebook account, which is not exactly like deleting your account. It's a step in the middle between having an active account and completely erasing yourself from Facebook. Deactivation, you would assume, and he assumed, meant that the company wouldn't be tracking his behavior while he's just reading the internet at large. But what he's found is that deactivation does not necessarily mean that Facebook stops tracking your behavior online. It doesn't mean that when you maybe reactivate your account, what happens is all that activity that you've been doing has been compiled so that you can continue to be targeted ads that suit your new interests.
All right. And something, there's a word, unicorn, that I thought was magical and fairy-like. There's a new term, unicorn, and I didn't know what this was. Explain this.
So unicorns are private companies that reach an estimated valuation of at least $1 billion. And the reason they're called unicorns is because they're supposed to be sort of incredibly rare and magical. But the latest a report recently shows that we're at a number of 147 companies that are unicorns. So they're not as rare as they are supposed to be.
So there's money to be had out there, people.
It sounds like it.
What are some of the companies that have reached unicorn status that surprise you?
You know, the thing about unicorns is they're not really companies that would surprise people that are paying attention to Silicon Valley. You know, these companies have been unicorns for a while, but Airbnb, Uber, Slack, Pinterest, at least in Silicon Valley, those are all companies that have been buzzy for a long time. So it makes sense that they would be.
Are they all tech companies, Joan? I didn't hear you say that. Are they or not?
They're not necessarily all tech companies, but that's where the kind of center of all this money being poured into companies is. That's where a lot of this venture capital money is flowing, and so that's where these private companies have the capability to reach that kind of valuation before going public.
Casper, the bed manufacturer, is on that list.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
huh.
See, another one that you've heard of, but there you go. Worth more than $1 billion.
Wow.
I helped make them a billionaire.
John, we have less than a minute, but I'm curious about this story about the black hole, the Event Horizon Telescope story about the black hole. Can you just do that one kind of quickly?
Yeah, sure. So black holes are fascinating things, and we have an idea of what they look like, but only from illustrations. And this week we're supposed to get our first actual picture taken of a black hole called Sagittarius A, which is thousands of light years away, but it will give us our first peek at what a black hole really looks like.
That's very exciting.
I am kind of intrigued by that. Perfect. Joan Saltzman, senior reporter for CNET. You can find her on Twitter at Joan_E. Thank you so much. We like talking to you on a Tech Tuesday. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joan. Appreciate it. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio.